Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I'm your host, Dan, Radio Health Evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Wrong Town at the Wrong Time show. I pull this from Senator Lindsey Graham's comments to Brett Kavanaugh. He said, if you're looking for a fair process, you came to the wrong town at the wrong time, my friend. Now, let me make abundantly clear, Health Matters has no opinion on the confirmation of the Supreme Court justice.
And just why not?
Because
we step on landmines all the time.
I know, but because I have no idea of whom is telling the truth, who is telling the truth, actually. I have no idea. I really cannot tell. Apparently, now it is, have you ever, I don't know. I mean, there's so many different ways to look at it. But since there is no truth that you can say, all right, this is unequivocally so, I have no opinions on it. I really just, I can't tell who's right and who's wrong. But boy, it sure has been a big problem. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. Also, a special radio wave to the MSU Ronald Eglin Space Science Center here at Moorhead State University. My co-medical host to help me try to get through this show without making a horrible speech stumble like I just did, from the University of Kentucky, assistant professor in the physician assistant program, Shelly Irving. Hi, Shelly.
Hello.
And from the University of Kentucky as well, executive director of networking and infrastructure, to tell you how to access Health Matters on the internet, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show just like we say every week. You know what? We even say that when you listen to a rerun of the show.
That's true. Historical reenactment.
A historical reenactment. To get the audio of the show, go to WMKY.org. It's pretty simple. That's the Moorhead State Public Radio website. You know, look around. Make the station director happy. You know, look at a few of the other shows. Pretend like you like them. But end up at Health Matters, because that's where you want to go. Health Matters will show you a list of the most recent shows. You can read the summaries on them, but obviously the gold mine here is when you click on the link and you can re-listen to the show. If somebody missed the show, or you're telling your friend about how wonderful that show was, you can give them the link and then they can listen and enjoy in the wonderfulness that is Health Matters. Isn't that right, Tony?
Sure.
So a couple weeks ago we did a show, got lots of compliments on it. It was pretty funny. But hey.
Why was it funny?
Well, I mean, I think it was because I was stupid.
So, thanks to all of our alert radio fans who appreciate that Rick, in fact, is stupid.
And are willing to say it in public. Again, WMKY.org is where you listen to it. But then after that, you have to get involved in the conversation. You have to be one of the two people that talk to us regularly through Facebook. Facebook.com/HMRadioshow. And you, too, can ask a question, and we might just answer it. You might not like the answer, but we probably will answer it. We got a couple of them around the world that are keeping asking us stuff, and Tony keeps right on responding.
I still know nothing about worthwhile about cystic fibrosis. If I see an article, it's going on, Bill.
Sorry, Bill. Hey, it's not that we're not hearing you. It's just that
we
don't apparently
know what
Tony
to do
doesn't
about
care.
It. Yeah. Stupidity doesn't only exist on your side of the studio, Rick, I guess.
So anyway, you know, obviously on Facebook, we want you to send us some feedback. We want you to interact with the show. You know, ask questions, post some show topics. I mean, even if you post a topic that we don't know how to do a show on, we'll still talk about that show topic and the fact that we don't know how to do it. The interaction, Facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor is 10 Recommendations on How to Prevent Cancer. You may have noticed we at Health Matters have gone off on a tangent on cancer, both early detection and also prevention this fall. And I want to bring these back from last year just to remind you about these 10 recommendations. First of all, the problem. Cancer is responsible for 1 in 8 deaths across the globe. Wealthier countries bear the highest burden of cancer prevalence because it is more common as we age. By 2030, the global cancer burden is estimated to be 21.7 million new cases, 13 million deaths resulting from cancer, total economic cost $500 billion. The general aging of the population will increase the number of cancer cases, but more patients will also be surviving, and that can be a problem as well. This looked at the last 30 years on diet, weight, physical activity, and cancer, confirming a link between cancer and lifestyle, and they have evidence-based recommendations on how to reduce your cancer risk. This comes from the AICR, the World Cancer Research Fund, data from 51 million people, 3.5 million cancer cases, 17 different cancer sites, and here are their 10 recommendations. Number one, maintain a healthy weight. Many cancers have been linked to being overweight. As a matter of fact, we'll talk about that some during this show. Even high normal body mass index values may be associated with an increased risk of cancer. Being overweight or obese is a cause of 12 cancers: liver, ovarian, prostate, stomach, mouth and pharynx, colorectal, breast, gallbladder, kidney, esophageal, adenocarcinoma, and pancreatic and endometrial carcinoma, all related to your weight. So I understand. I mean, all of us have, well, I won't say all of us, but most of us are struggling with our weight one way or another, including those of us here in Health Matters, other than our practically teenage producer, Brian Courtney. The rest of us, we are sadly no longer teenagers, and we struggle with our weight. But by the same token, I know there are more benefits to weight loss than just simply looking good. There are a lot of health benefits, and one of them includes reducing cancer. Number two, physical activity: walk more, sit less. Pure and simple, walk more, sit less.
Why do we do the show sitting down?
Yeah, well, because
if we walk
while we did the show, I would lose my place on the
So you script. Can't multitask.
I can't monotask. I'm looking at trying to keep my place on a script, and I can't do it when
I'm
walking.
Can't you print it in bigger
text? We could stand.
Yeah, we could stand and do the show. Stand. Why don't we stand and do the show, Tony?
Because the microphones are... You people don't understand radio at all. Number three, eat a diet with high consumption of whole grains, vegetables, fruits, and beans. This is not rocket surgery. It is rocket science, you mean? Yeah.
Well, does you mean, is it rockets? Is it rocket science or
brain surgery?
It could be either
sure.
one.
I'm just curious.
Number four, limit the consumption of fast foods and other processed foods high in fat, starches, or sugars. And number five, limit your consumption of red meat and processed meat.
Is processed meat something that's in a symmetrical shape?
Right. These are the symmetrical meats. These are the cubes. These are the spheres, the squares,
meat
the circles.
Wallace.
The dogs.
The sticks. All those things. When we say dogs,
would you like us to the
cylinders? Right. I think if your meat it comes in a symmetrical shape, then you shouldn't eat it.
So a can of spam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no. I suppose you could mush it up into an amorphous shape, but when it comes out, it's the shape of the can. So please,
what about sardines? Yeah. They're symmetrical.
Now, sardines are. But they're sardine shaped.
I guess they're fish. They're not meat. I guess you kind of missed that point.
Yeah, that's not correct. But at any rate, I think red meat's one problem, and it does raise your risk of some types of cancer. But the processed meats, the symmetrical meats, those are the ones we really need to focus on. So that's the first five. And again, for one more, try to maintain a healthy body weight. Walk more, sit less. Eat a diet with high grains, vegetables, fruits, and beans. Limit your fast food consumption and foods that are high in fat, starches, and sugars. And then limit consumption of red and processed meat. Those are the first five recommendations from the World Cancer Society. I believe that's right, isn't it? Yeah. World Cancer Research Fund. After they have reviewed all the known information on lifestyle and cancer, these are some things you can do to lower your risk of cancer. Just a reminder, that's our sponsor. Now, before we finish the first factional portion, I want to remind you of the Lung Force Expo.
Did you say factional portion?
If you want your own radio show, that's fine. That's up to you. I am here to do this radio show.
I tried not to be here today.
This is the Lung Force Expo in Prestonsburg. The Lung Force Expo is a program designed for patients, caregivers, and healthcare providers to learn more about the latest trends, research, resources surrounding lung cancer, emphysema, and other chronic lung diseases. There will be speakers from a variety of fields. I will be coming from my field to speak there. There will also be people whose lives are affected by these conditions to talk to you. By participating, you help change what it means to live with lung disease, and that is absolutely critical here in Eastern Kentucky, where we have very high rates of emphysema and other forms of chronic lung disease and very high rates of lung cancer. So by all means, consider the Lung Force Expo. That's coming December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, Jenny Wiley State Resort Park in Prestonsburg, Kentucky. We will remind you of that again, so just go ahead, save the date. All right, the first thing I got, which I like, this is Ariel Harsanyi, and these are five terms that we should banish from medicine. And Shelley, I thought you would really like that, and Rick may have some thoughts too, although I doubt it. Now, this was September 26th, Medscape. Now, the first term we should banish is heart failure. You have heart failure. Your heart is failing. Your heart doesn't even try anymore. Your heart is just a miserable failure of a failing heart. And you say, well, what about heart dysfunction or insufficiency? Heart insufficiency. Wouldn't those be better terms than heart failure? Because no one wants to know their heart has failed.
Well, doesn't it matter what that's causing the heart failure?
Well, no, that's not the point. We should not use the term heart failure. If you want to know what's causing the heart insufficiency or the heart dysfunction, I can talk with you about that. But they say, you know, when you put failure, and we, you know, Shelley, we talk about kidney failure, we talk about liver failure, we talk about heart failure, respiratory failure. Failure is a big word for doctors and healthcare providers.
So what's the purpose of this? Just to make things clearer or less panicky for the patients or for documentation purposes? Why should we change?
Dr. Lynn Warner-Stevenson, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, Brigham and Women's Hospital, says this stigma has consequences not only for self-image and personal goals, but also for families, employment, and insurance. Clinics labeled as heart failure clinics and the linked attachment of failure may discourage the entry of those patients who could benefit most. Would you go to a heart failure clinic? I would, in fact.
If I needed to, I would, yeah.
If my heart was failing, I would go.
I would go.
But look, if I was classified with a failed heart and I was still alive, I think I'd be pretty darn grateful.
You think, look, I don't know.
I mean, heart failure sounds like they need to take it out and replace it.
Hey, I'm here. My heart's not even trying.
Yeah, you're not putting your heart into it.
Yeah. Okay. The second one, since we're down to the final minute of this segment,
took us here.
I know, is to intensify. This is when you intensify or escalate the regimen. This is frightening to patients. Language matters. Perhaps the term intensification therapy should be altered to reaching appropriate therapy, because intensification sounds like we are, in fact, in an arms race, maybe more complexity, more adverse events.
Well, if you think about it, you know, we're using electronic medical records. Patients can access the records, and so we might really need to change the way we talk about stuff.
And we already have. That's the point. They didn't even mention this one, but we used to talk about a patient who had shortness of breath, and we would abbreviate shortness of breath, SOB. And we stopped using that term after patients started accessing their medical records. There were some blow-ups, and we call it shortness of air now, SOA. Because of concerns that somebody who did not understand the abbreviation in the jargon might take that wrong. So you're right in that sense. Patients accessing the medical record may be one of the reasons that we look at this. One more to think about over the break: diabetic. You know, the fact that you are known by your disease. You're a diabetic. You're not a person with diabetes. You're a diabetic. Maybe it's time for you to be a person with diabetes. Maybe it's time for you to take a break and be a Health Matters fan when we come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Wrong Town at the Wrong Time show because, according to Senator Lindsey Graham, if you're looking for a fair process, you came to the wrong town at the wrong time.
You should say that in a John Wayne voice. It just sounds like something you'd hear in a Western, doesn't
it? It's a wrong town at a wrong time. That wasn't very good at all, was it?
No, it really wasn't. Kudos for effort, though.
Brian's usually pretty good with my imitations, and even Brian said, I don't know who John Wayne is, but that wasn't him.
Well, I had forgotten about your imitations until you did the knock-knock joke with Sean Connery. Then I realized, you're not there.
Our sponsor for the second time is 10 recommendations on how to prevent cancer. Number one, we'll go back and start over. One, maintain a healthy weight. Again, 12 cancers linked to obesity or being overweight. And so this is really much more important than simply what you look like or your cardiovascular capabilities, your ability to walk or to run. This is also relates to your risk of cancer. So we've got to work harder on trying to maintain a normal weight. And I will tell you, I put something on Health Matters that I don't entirely agree with, but this article title is Everything You've Heard About Obesity Is Wrong. And they mentioned, if you look at the 5-year success rates, the 10-year success rates of diets, it is absolutely abysmal. It is very, very hard to lose weight. Please work on maintaining weight and try to stay as active as you can, because once it comes on, it is very, very difficult to get it off. Two is physical activity, walk more, sit less. Three is eat a diet with high consumptions of whole grains, vegetables, fruits, and beans. Four, limit fast foods and other processed foods high in fat, starches, and sugars. Five, limit consumption of red meat and processed meat. Again, if your meat comes in asymmetric shape, that is processed meat. We're up to number six. Number six, limit consumption of sugar-sweetened drinks. Drink mostly water and some unsweetened drinks. And I think if you're putting sugar in your drinks in 2018 or whenever we reenact this show, that's a bad idea. You do not need to get sugar in liquid form. That the problem with it, the special problem with that is you're bringing in calories in a way that does not lead to a feeling of fullness or satiety. It simply is just calories coming in. So get the sugar out of your drinks. A strong recommendation from Health Matters. Seven, limit alcohol consumption. For cancer prevention, it's best not to drink alcohol at all. I'm sorry. I know that runs against what the way we feel society should run. I know people have heard about wine and so forth, but when you look at overall the health benefits versus the health risks, as best we can tell here at Health Matters, it does not make sense to drink alcohol for your health in any way. And also, you cannot say that alcohol is health neutral, if you want to call it that. Alcohol, in fact, is something that is detrimental to your health. You have to decide whether you like it enough and want to do it enough that you drink it despite that. Number eight, limit your consumption of foods with high levels of fat, starch, or sugar. That sure sounds like number four, limit consumption of fast foods with high fat, starches, and sugar. But this is I guess this is at home. When you're out at the restaurant, limit your consumption of foods that are high in fat, starches, and sugars. But when you're home, limit your consumption of foods with high levels of fat, starches, and sugar. Which include fast food under item 8. Do you get the idea they just wanted to get to 10? Rick, you've accused me of that before. I'm accusing now this World Cancer Research Fund. They wanted to get to 10.
Nothing wrong with getting to 10 because 10, you can, you know, you get two hands, 10 fingers. I mean, it's
you can keep track of
it. Yeah, it's a nice symmetrical number as to where you do these top 7, top 11, top 14. And what it really is it, you didn't like three of them, so you threw it out.
I stop when I'm finished. I don't see why you think that would be a bad thing.
You inject your personal, and I think you take three out.
They're biased.
You're biased. They're biased.
Who show
is this?
Doesn't
make them wrong. That just makes them biased.
No.
Okay. I don't know where we're going with this, but I'm going to go to number nine. Number nine, don't use supplements for cancer prevention. Let me say it again. Do not use supplements for cancer prevention. A healthy diet is the best means to reduce your risk for cancer. So if you are still living in the 1990s and taking beta carotene or antioxidants or any of those things that you think will lower your risk of cancer, well, just stop it. Get a healthy diet, maintain a healthy weight, do healthy exercise, but do not take pills, do not take powders, do not take dietary supplements.
The blueberries taste better anyway.
Yeah, blueberries. Now, my wife likes blueberries. We always have some blueberries around.
Good antioxidants, yeah.
Throw them on a salad. Blueberries are good stuff. Rick, you like blueberries?
Yes.
Okay.
They're great in yogurt.
It worries me because we agreed about something.
Well, okay. No, I don't like them. I prefer strawberries. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got to wash them really good, though.
Yeah. Strawberries got those little irregular borders, and boy, you gotta get you one of those little fruit brush things and really get them out because they are one of the dirtier fruits. And then number 10, advise all new mothers to breastfeed their baby if at all possible. That is our top 10 recommendations on how to prevent cancer. One more time through them in our third and final fractional portion. Now, we have gotten nowhere in this show. So I'm going to go ahead through these five things, and with one that will be near and dear to Shelley's heart, these are the five terms that should be banished from medicine. Number one, heart failure clinics, kidney failure, liver failure. Our patients don't fail. I mean, they may have dysfunction of their organs. They may have insufficiency of their organs, but we've got to stop labeling this a failure. Number two is intensify or escalate. It has sort of an arms race connotation. And if I'm going to intensify your insulin or your blood pressure medicines, wouldn't it be better if I simply reach appropriate therapy? I use appropriate blood pressure therapy. Number three, which I think, Shelley, you might be interested in, mid-level provider.
Mid-level provider.
You want to take that one?
And, so there's a lot of debate over that term, mid-level provider. What does it mean? What's it mean to the patient?
Yeah, maybe you're halfway there, or you give them half of a visit.
What's going underneath that?
I haven't finished medical school yet.
Yeah,
so that was one of the ones I'm going to go back.
So this is physician assistants and nurse practitioners. And we can't quite figure out what we tend to put them together because they do see patients in an outpatient setting, and we can't figure out what to call them. We could call them physician assistants and nurse practitioners, but that'd be too complicated.
So there's advanced practice provider, there's
physician extender,
practitioner. Yeah, see, that doesn't offend me, but you've just offended a whole bunch of mid-levels out
physician
there.
Physician extender. It sounds like, hey, come stretch out my calves a little bit there, physician extender.
No.
It's a tough thing to – I mean
– Yeah. So I think looking for a place, we've talked about it some on the show here. First of all, Shelley and I have worked together for a number of years, and she is my eyes and ears when I'm not there. I trust her judgment, and we have crafted a practice when we were working together in palliative care that really worked out pretty well. We also do a lot of work together in one of the local free clinics, and frankly, I trust her judgment. She's taught me. I've taught her. The training program is different for a physician assistant or for a nurse practitioner or for a physician. The physician has a longer period of training than either of the other two providers. Now, in some cases, that may be very beneficial. In other cases, that's completely unnecessary. And what I tell my patients is, you know, after about 10 or 15 years, a smart person, an intelligent provider is an intelligent provider. And a person who is not intelligent and doesn't keep up is not a good provider. And so while I can be impressed with the fact that physicians go to medical school and then residency and have more training, after about 15 or 20 years, it really comes down to, are you keeping up? Do you care about your patients? So you will find good, excellent providers and knowledgeable providers and all those. And the problem is a mid-level provider sounds like you did not quite, you're halfway where you needed to be when you saw that person. So they say, don't use that term. I tend to agree, but I, again, a little bit of trouble. I guess advanced practice is what we're talking about now, right? Advanced practice providers?
Yeah, I was going to say, what would you propose?
Well, my problem with advanced practice providers is it sounds like then that's a specialty, you know, because I'm an ordinary practice. I'm not, you know, you're not mid and me full, but I'm not ordinary and you're advanced.
Right.
What it means is advanced, I guess, compared to, I don't even say there. I'm going to insult somebody no matter what I say.
You are.
So I'm just going to leave it. I'm not sure exactly what. I would use nurse practitioner and physician assistant.
But this is the problem with this debate.
Yep. We talked about diabetic, and then the fifth one, which we are all familiar with as well. There's a medical term called non-compliant. That is, you know, I wanted this patient to take this medicine, and they were non-compliant. Like, you know, just obstinate. Maybe they were stupid. Maybe they just didn't realize they should take it. When, in fact, there are a variety of reasons, side effects, cost. Some of my patients are not able to take their medicines because it interferes with their lifestyle. Again, you take a fluid pill, and then you hop in the car and try to drive across country, and that's not going to work. So there are many reasons why patients don't take their medicines, and simply to label all those reasons as non-compliant, as if I were some kind of overlord, and you're not following orders, and you should be court-martialed, if you're under my care, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Was that all of them on the list?
That's all on the list. You got some you want?
Well, one that I'm always really sensitive to is refused. Patient refused treatment. Patient refused that referral. So I always try to say decline. Patient declined. Because, again, you run into the same issue. There may be lots of very good reasons why they are not going to go to that referral or not do the next step that you want them to do. But we don't need to make it sound like they're just being obstinate and difficult.
Well, it's a sense of arrogance. I order you to take this medicine and you refuse or you're non-compliant with my orders. But I always felt like with my patients, and I'm not trying to set myself up as a hero, but this is a negotiation. I would like for you to take this. I would like for you to increase your dose of this. I think things would go better for you. Can we do that? No. Okay. Well, then what are our other options? And so we have a negotiation. But I'm not ordering you to do stuff and you don't have to comply with my orders. I'm not a medical police person. And like you said, if you decide not to do the thing that I said, it doesn't mean you've refused to do it. It just means that in talking, we chose a different path. I think those type of negotiations are really important. You're the person that ultimately benefits or doesn't benefit from your health care. And if you're not on board, then I've not done my job. So I agree with you. Refuse, non-compliant, not the words that I particularly care to use. And also, these are the things that if the patient has access to the medical records, these are things that will drive a wedge between patients and providers. So I can tell you right now, if you're trying to take care of a patient, you shouldn't put those words in the chart.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up, an interesting abstract that I just pulled out, and I'll be honest with you, I have the name of the study, but I don't know, I don't have where it was published. It was the Kuopio ischemic heart disease study. This was a population-based study in Finland, and they looked at the level of marriage satisfaction in 2,262 men.
Okay.
2,262 men, the level of marital satisfaction, and then they follow them for almost 26 years. You can do this in Finland. You can do this in Northern Europe because they have these national record-keeping systems, so they just followed them. They said, okay, we know how satisfied you were with your marriage back 25 years ago. What has happened? The average age in this follow-up is 53 years old, so these people started aging. They got up in their 60s. They got up in their 70s. Some of them died, and some of them died suddenly. It's called sudden cardiac death. About 4 to 5 million people do this globally every year. And it's said, I've been told that about 2% of people have a heart attack. The first thing that happens is they simply drop dead, and that's where you do the CPRs. They lie there, their heart stops, and you do CPR. And this is what scares us about people with chest pain, which is why we hospitalize a lot of people who wind up not having a problem with their heart, is because we're scared we might miss it, and then they might have that sudden death. Well, these people, these men, who we know how satisfied they were with their marriage, the ones who were dissatisfied with their marriage had a 90%, a 1.9 times increase in their risk of sudden cardiac death.
Well, now how were they measuring satisfaction and dissatisfaction?
All right. You would ask that, of course.
I would.
Because I think you're being obstinate. I think you're being a non-compliant.
I refuse to comply.
And they gave them a questionnaire, but I did not write down the questions. I wrote down a lot of other things, but I did not write down the...
It was a questionnaire.
It was.
That they self-reported.
Yeah. Using a well-structured, self-administered questionnaire. That's all I've got. I don't have the questions. Even a fairly satisfied marriage was higher compared to a very satisfied marriage. So if people were truly in love... Well, I don't know. Maybe it can be...
Satisfied.
Can you be in love and not be satisfied?
Yes.
By golly, I love her, but oh boy.
Yes.
Rick, you don't get to be silent on this one. Can you be in love and
wrong
not be satisfied
town,
with
wrong
your marriage?
Time, Tony. Wrong town, wrong time.
But you got to do it in your John Wayne voice.
Yeah. I don't think you can be satisfied.
That was more like Forrest Gump.
I am extremely satisfied and madly in love. Let's move on. So,
here it is. Marital factors, a source of stress. Dissatisfaction can lead to unhappiness as well as increased stress. And that could adversely affect cardiac function. Maybe it could even cause heart failure.
You can't say that now.
Well, if you had a failed marriage, I think you could have a failed heart.
Well, maybe we don't need to say failed marriage anymore.
A dysfunctional marriage.
Dysfunctional marriage.
And a dysfunctional heart. And you get adrenaline response to that, increase your heart rate, and that might do it. Another mechanism they mentioned is, well, look, if you're having difficulties with your marriage, you may change your habits. You may exercise less. You may drink more. You may take up some unhealthy habits to handle the stress of a dysfunctional marriage. And so it may be that, but for whatever reason, it is important. I have been impressed at how important it is to maintain a healthy marriage.
It's important.
Physical health and financial health. Boy, you talk about one of the biggest ways you can waste money is to enter a marriage and then leave that marriage. And that creates a huge, huge financial hole. It is very, very difficult to overcome.
It's very stressful.
Yep. And so this plea from Health Matters, put some extra time and effort into your marriage and see if you can't have a satisfactory marriage. It is worth the time you put in, both in terms of your physical health and your financial health. Is that fair, Rick?
Yep.
Even in this town at
Absolutely.
This time?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, to my way of thinking, if you can maintain your health and maintain your marriage, those are two key items for financial success in retirement. Very important. Next up, 2 minutes left in this fractional portion. We're talking about the influenza, the flu caused. Rick, I want you to get a new number for flu deaths because I think you've talked about 35,000. I felt a little squeamish about that. I wasn't sure. But according to the CDC, last year, this was the 2017/18 influenza season, 900,000 people were hospitalized and 80,000 people died from the flu. The death toll for children, a record-breaking 180 children died, surpassed the previous high of 171 for a non-pandemic flu season. And since the after last flu season, the CDC used a new methodology for ranking severity. They ranked the last year as a high severity season across all age groups. That is, some types of influenza seem to preferentially affect children, some preferentially affect pregnant women, some preferentially senior citizens. This was across the board one of the worst flu seasons ever.
But it makes it easier to get in line with that number I quoted before.
Yeah, yeah. So you this,
know, but it is funny, though, because, I mean, we've talked about this over the 15 or 16 years we've been doing this show. We've put so much energy, and rightfully so, into things like cancer. It's not going to be long before flu is going to be in the top five of killers in the U.S.
And it is something that the flu vaccine, the influenza vaccination, it does help. Vaccination rates among children 6 months to 17 years have fallen short of goals for the past few seasons. Actually, last year, the vaccination rate dropped. But they still, children had the highest vaccination rates. Lowest among children aged 13 to 17 years. States varied widely. Rhode Island was the highest with 76% vaccination rate. Wyoming the least at 43%. And very, very disappointing in terms of pregnant women. About half of the eligible pregnant women did not get vaccinated. We're going to come back and talk more about the influenza virus and other viruses in our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I think Tony finally got tired of arguing with me, so we had to come back. I'm Rick Phillips, and this is Health Matters.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Wrong Town at the Wrong Time show.
It's the wrong fractional portion.
Yes. 10 recommendations on how to prevent cancer.
Not seven,
although I think there's really just nine. I'll be honest. I just can't see this. But
who's the mid-level now?
All right, yeah.
Yeah, really.
Number one, maintain a healthy rate. Number healthy weight.
I think an advanced practice provider could do that.
Could do that. Maintain a healthy weight. 12 cancers linked to being overweight or obese. Number two, walk more, sit less. Number three, high consumption of whole grains, vegetables, fruit, and beans. I'm going to skip number four for a minute. Number five, limit consumption of red meat and processed meat. Number six, limit consumption of sugar-sweetened drinks. Number seven, limit alcohol consumption. It's limit, limit, limit. Number nine, I'm skipping to that. Don't use supplements.
They're probably in order for a reason. You're just going to reorder them now.
Yeah. Number 10, all new mothers breastfeed their baby. Now, let's go back. Number four, limit consumption of fast foods and other processed foods high in fat, starches, or sugars. And number eight, limit your consumption of foods with high levels of fat, starches, and sugars, including fast food. I'm saying that's the same thing. That is our sponsor anyway. 10 more or less recommendations on how to prevent cancer. Now, we were talking last time
We weren't. You were talking.
Okay, you take it. We were talking about influenza. 80,000 deaths in the U.S. last year.
So you say.
Yes. So the CDC says, and Rick, that's the number we will be using until the end of this time next year. 70% of hospitalizations and 90% of deaths occurred in people ages 65 and older. That is a prime target vaccination. 3 out of 4 healthcare workers were vaccinated. A lot of healthcare systems now mandate vaccination. The lowest rates, unfortunately, were in long-term care providers who work in nursing homes. That is discouraging. Progress has plateaued among pregnant women and healthcare workers. We're not getting more pregnant women and more healthcare workers in to be vaccinated. Again, just a reminder, anytime during pregnancy, we recommend you get a flu vaccine if it is the start of flu season. So if you're in your first trimester, in your second trimester, in your third trimester, it is safe and it is absolutely necessary. If you think a vaccine might affect your unborn child, Wait till you get the flu. That is what affects the unborn child. Mm-hmm. Pregnant women who get the flu do very poorly. As the pregnancy progresses, the likelihood of severe illness gets worse. When you get to the second and third trimester, you're more likely to die. You're more likely to be hospitalized. You're more likely to have severe respiratory illness. It can have serious effects on the fetus. High fevers can cause birth defects, and far more commonly can contribute to premature births. So you do not want influenza while you're pregnant, and there is a simple way to lower your risk, and that's to get a flu shot. So those are strong recommendations from the CDC and from Health Matters. Another part of this is washing your hands and trying to, if you are sick, please don't go to the office and give everyone else whatever you have. This winter, let's try staying at home if you are sick and you might be infectious and affect your coworkers. They will all thank you for that. And working from home is easier than it used to be. There are three antivirals recommended by the FDA this season. One is Tamiflu, oseltamivir, and zanamivir, that's Relenza. And then Paramivir, which is Rapivab, and I have not used Rapivab before, but the Tamiflu is the one that everyone knows about. Now, while we're talking about viruses, I got two other things. This was from the Kentucky Department of Public Health. West Nile virus, you may remember West Nile virus, transmitted by mosquitoes. Kentucky had a wave of West Nile virus. We now have some immunity in the state, but there are some people who are naive and not immune to that. There were five cases in Louisville. Four of them were what they call neuroinvasive. Those are the people that you have to hospitalize. It can cause brain damage. This is a very, very serious form of it. There have been no deaths from West Nile virus in the past year, according to the Kentucky Department of Public Health. Just a reminder, tick bites and mosquito bites are no longer a mild nuisance. They are not to be put up with. If you go outside and you're in an area where there are ticks or mosquitoes, take measures to protect yourself. This is not the way most of us grew up and is no longer, as I said, just itching or just an annoying thing. This is they can transmit some significant diseases, and this is a change. So do not do what you used to do with ticks and mosquitoes. In 2017, one non-fatal West Nile case in Louisville. 2016, two cases, one death. 2015, three human cases, no death. So, again, we have a trickle of West Nile virus still here in Kentucky. Statewide, the Department for Public Health identified 1,778 cases of acute hepatitis A since August 1st, 2017. So that's a little over a year. 1,778 cases, 999 hospitalizations, and you could be number 1,000. You'll get a certificate and some type of award. But please
not
don't
me.
Do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And 14 deaths as of September 15, 2018. So this hepatitis A outbreak that we've had, practically 1,000 hospitalizations, 14 deaths. This was one monster outbreak. Across
well,
the state.
It's not over, right?
Yes. It is not over. You are correct.
And you can get vaccinated against that.
You can. As a matter of fact, the Lexington Department, Health Department said vaccinate everybody. Now, the thing you got to remember is children now are vaccinated against hepatitis A. Mm-hmm. Many healthcare workers are vaccinated against hepatitis A. Daycare workers vaccinated against hepatitis A. So you can get this. You can walk into your doctor's office and say, you know, I'd like that hepatitis A vaccine. It's called Havrix. I think there's one other brand. You have two shots 6 months apart. And I've had in our clinic a steady wave of people asking about getting vaccinated for hepatitis A. And my answer is uniformly yes. Why would you not vaccinate a person unless they have some type of an immune problem? Why would you not vaccinate them against hepatitis A?
How long before restaurants require it for workers?
Hard to say, Rick.
There's been a lot in the news in Kentucky about restaurant workers coming down with, you know, Hep A.
Yeah, we've not been enthusiastic about increasing regulation, but this was Kentucky's hepatitis A outbreak was not exclusively related to restaurants, but there were a number of cases that appear to be transmitted through restaurant food. And so I in my mind, again, if all the kids are being vaccinated, then there is no reason for us to pick and choose among the adults. So if you work in food preparation, I think you should be vaccinated. And that's really not, I don't have to really think a lot about the ethics of that because we're vaccinating everyone who's below a certain age. Why would we not vaccinate the adults? So, Rick, I'm on your side on that one. Next up, we talked about having a good marriage. Now, how about a regular bedtime? This was Reuters News. This is where I found this, but it was published in Scientific Reports. The title of the paper, which, by the way, is somnolizing. Is that a word? It induces sleep. This is the title, Validation of the Sleep Regularity Index in Older Adults and Associations with Cardiometabolic Risk. Now, they came up with this Sleep Regularity Index, and they were in the process of validating it. And this would be a tool, and that's a handy thing to have if you're judging how a person sleeps. We talk about whether or not you reach REM sleep, you reach the deep sleep. We talk about the number of hours you sleep, but they were looking at whether or not you are going to bed at the same time. Sleep disturbances, this is their abstract. They said, look, sleep disturbances, including insufficient sleep duration, and they call it circadian misalignment, where, again, you're staying up at night, you're sleeping during the day. We know that actually increases your risk of having some type of cardiac disease or metabolic disease. But what about regularity of sleep schedule? So they developed a new metric, the Sleep Regularity Index, as well as relationships of that between other things. Now, what they did in this study, they developed this and they looked to see how it would affect the risk of other diseases. They found significant relationships between sleep irregularity, irregular bedtime, irregular waking time, and obesity, high levels of fasting blood glucose, which leads to diabetes, projected risk of developing cardiovascular disease over the next decade, and in people with high blood pressure, metabolic disease displayed higher sleep irregularity than those without. Greater sleep irregularity was further correlated with the increased depression severity, perceived stress, and aspects of psychiatric health known to have relationships with heart disease. And finally, trends were observed between that and heart failure, or as we call it, heart insufficiency or dysfunction, heart disease, and blood clots in the veins. Now, the problem with this, when you look at sleep regularity, if you are a top banana, that's what we need. We should, instead of a mid-level, we'd be a top banana provider.
A top banana provider.
Yeah, but if you are a top banana, you set your schedule. You come home at a certain time. You go to bed at a certain time. You
get
up at a certain time.
You're the top banana.
Yeah, because you decide when you do it. Now, if you are, in fact, receiving orders from the top banana, and you do what you are told, and Rick, I know Rick is probably, what are you, a second-tier banana, something like that? I mean, he's a pretty big deal at UK, but not the top banana. And so when they do an install of some new device or when something really goes wrong, Rick can be up all night. So you can see, by not being the top banana, Rick has an irregular sleep pattern. Now, that's not something you can fix unless you quit your job.
Or become the top banana.
Yeah. You need to be the top banana, Rick.
Mm-mm, not a chance.
Okay.
Don't want it.
All right.
I may have to lose my sleep, but I don't have to take on as much of the risk as my boss has to take on.
Gotcha. Point is, there are a lot of things that go into your sleep regularity other than a decision to be irregular with your sleep. You could say, okay, well, I should be more regular with my sleep. Yes, please do that. This message from Health Matters, be more regular with your sleep. But for many people, that's not an option. And I think the problem is they measured this in these adults, and there were almost 2,000 adults that took their sleep regularity index. But I don't think that they adequately control for all the lifestyle factors that would give you irregular sleep.
Right. So, like, what would happen if all your regular sleep happens during the day?
Yeah, I think you would pass the sleep index. I mean, you would have maybe some circadian misalignment. If you slept during the day and stayed up at night and used UV lights to try to reset your circadian rhythms, you could probably do it. I mean, it would be like living in Japan. You could do this.
But hasn't that been associated with increased health risk for certain things, too?
Living in Japan? You knew I was going to say that.
No, not living in Japan.
I mean, the Japanese people live a long time, Shelley.
Pointing
that out.
They do live a long time. But, you know, people who you have worked night shift for years. And
yes. Now, shift work in particular, where you stay up all night during your job, and then you flip that for weekends or time off. That is very detrimental to your health. Has been linked with higher levels of certain types of cancers, as well as cardiovascular disease, obesity, diabetes, and so forth. Part of it is the stress of trying to stay up. Many of our nighttime healthcare providers and other people wind up eating more in order to try to keep themselves awake during their night shift. So that can really be bad. But if you were perfectly aligned so that you learned to sleep during the day, you had blackout curtains, you turned off the phone and all noises and distractions, and you were able to sleep deep during the day and work at night, I think you might be able to get by again, because you could live somewhere else in the world and those would be your hours. I think you can do that, but you have to really work hard at it. For most people, that's a problem. And I'm also saying the same thing. I think for people, especially people who are not upper socioeconomic status, they may not be in control of when they go to sleep. Rescue squad people, people like that. There are a lot of people that, whose work is going to keep them up from time to time. Shifting gears, a couple of things, interesting trends that I wanted to mention to our radio fans at the time we got left. This was on September 30th. I got it from Associated Press. It's just a thing. Most U.S. corporations are jumping deeper into care workers receive beyond just giving them insurance cards and a list of doctors. Many employers are offering free primary care or charging only a small fee for primary care. According to the National Business Group on Health, by 2019, 56% of large employers will have on-site or next-door health centers, compared to 47%. We're up almost 10% since 2016 going to 2019. Now, I think the reason I put this on the show is because I think the idea of primary care, this is where you go to the doctor when you have any type of problem, undifferentiated problem, and it is not specialty care. I think that our methods of delivering that are changing. We are right now, we are burning out primary care providers like nobody's business. We have saddled the entire enterprise on them. They do all the paperwork. They make all the referrals. They have to justify for the insurance company all the tests, all the diagnostic procedures and so forth, and we're just eating them alive. On the other hand, if they can then work with a group of people and be their first stop and not have to take responsibility for the entire healthcare system, then kind of disintegrating them vertically may be the solution to these people's survival. But it has been very discouraging if you are a primary care provider, a person who likes to see patients for ongoing care. It's been very discouraging, the amount of paperwork and regulation that has been laid on these providers.
Yeah, a concern I have with that trend is how do you then reintegrate that information or that health record when, as the person gets, say it's a young person, as they get older and they do need more chronic care, they need more routine care, they need more specialty care, will these facilities be able to integrate into the system at large?
Yeah, because we built a vertical system where you see your primary provider and they refer you to the cardiologist, the kidney specialist, the surgeon, and so forth. And then they get referred back and they're all using the same medical record. It sounds like the perfect system. I think the answer is going to be if we actually do have a good electronic medical record, then people from all different areas could be completely integrated. Right now, we don't. We have a piece of trash that creates more work than it helps, and we've got a lot of work to do. But if that were to actually come to fruition, then it doesn't matter where you get your care. Everyone would have access to the records, and everyone would talk to each other. That's what we've been asking for a decade. Mm-hmm. It's simply, can we make it so that all of your doctors and your mid-level advanced practice people talk to each other so that when you go anywhere, they will know what you have gotten elsewhere? And Rick, most of it is your fault.
Okay.
Thanks.
I mean, wrong town, wrong time.
What I like is you give him a catchphrase. Hey, Rick, what do you think? Wrong town, wrong time, Tony. Okay. So.
Well, that's the best impression you've done in a year.
I'm just saying, it's just great that you. I feel like I've given you your role in the show now. You just, that's all I can do is point to you, and you say, wrong town, wrong time. And it works.
At least I got it right.
So, but since you're on a roll, can you get us off the air?
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, wrong town, wrong time.
Everybody's laughing. Health Matters is a sedative radio show, also called a hypnotic radio show. Health Matters affects chemicals in the brain that may be unbalanced in people with sleep problems.
Health Matters may impair your thinking or reactions. You may still feel sleepy the morning after listening to our show, especially if you are a woman. Wow, woman. Wait at least 4 hours or until you are fully, mid-level woman, or until you are fully awake before you do anything that requires you to be awake and alert.
In January 2013, the Food and Drug Administration lowered the recommended volume for Health Matters. If you have heard our show in the past, your doctor may direct you to listen to a lower volume of this show than you did before.
Some people listening to our show have engaged in activities such as driving, eating, walking, making phone calls, or having sex, and later having no memory of the activity. If this happens to you, stop listening to Health Matters and talk with your doctor about another treatment for your sleep disorder.
Health Matters may be habit-forming and should be heard only by the person who owns the radio. Never share your radio with another person, especially someone with a history of abuse or addiction. Keep the radio in a place where others cannot get to it.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.